Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, May 28th. I'm Ray Graff. Oh, yeah. This is the time of year. The sun is shining. You get out there in the dirt with the shovel. You dig in the garden. This is what it's time for. At least that's what my wife says. For me, it's sitting by the air conditioner watching Green Acres. But that's a different show. This is the gardening show. And we have gardener Greg Ward of Ward's Nursery here and arborist Fred Breglia of Landis Arboretum to answer your questions as we head into summer. Give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Always a popular show, the gardening show. Call early, 800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Fred, Greg, and your gardening calls coming up. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Joining us on the program today to answer your gardening questions, Greg Ward of Ward's Nursery, a lawn and garden resource in Great Barrington, Massachusetts, and Fred Breglia, who is director of the Landis Arboretum in Esperance, New York. You got a gardening question? Call early. And I tell you what, we have a stack of emails already. We won't get to all of those yet. And, you know, if you don't call soon, you won't get in by the end of the show. So 800-348-2551 is the number, 1-800-348-2551, if you'd like to get in the queue and ask your gardening question. Fred Breglia, Greg Ward, welcome, gentlemen.
Hey, it's good to be back.
How you guys doing? Hot enough for you?
We're doing pretty good.
Yeah?
I like it.
Temperatures have been good. Yeah, I don't mind it. It's you know, we're getting the growing season really up. We're catching up on some lost time, I feel, with the cold spring.
Yeah. You know, the Landis Arboretum is open, right?
Correct. Yeah, we've been open the entire time, our grounds. Our classes and all of our spring program had to be canceled, and we have updated that to be canceled in terms of classes all the way through the end of June. We have done some online stuff, and I do have a pruning course that was in June. I was canceling it, but I think I'm going to end up offering it sort of free live on Facebook or something. So there'll be some notices of that. But our grounds are open, and the visitors have been coming out more than ever. So we've been really popular, and I'm glad that we can, you know, play a role in helping people in this situation we're in.
And Greg, the Ward's Nursery has still been open the whole time, right?
We have, started, social distancing, sterilization practices, lots of spacing, wearing masks, all way back in March, and continue to do so.
Well, I was at the garden center near my house over the weekend. The wife sent me out for soil, topsoil, which apparently has a lot of manure in it. I never even knew this, but I got several bags. The place was crowded. Everybody had masks on, but I think a lot of people are out there gardening.
I think it's a really big year for gardening for folks, and you know it makes a lot of sense. It's, you know, if you're going to social distance, it's hard to beat the pretty flowers and the beautiful trees, and certainly a great way, I think, for people to hopefully people really get to connect back to nature, and even after this is all over, you know, we see the increased visitation to our places, our green spaces.
Yeah, I think you're right. I had a question. My next-door neighbor, who's very smart, she is working on her lawn. Now, you know, being next to our lawn, she's going to have a number of weeds in her lawn because, I don't do much.
Over.
I just,
drifting.
It's all green to me, and I just mow it, and I couldn't care less. She, however, had stuff, and I wanted to ask you about this. She said, I've got this organic stuff that will kill broadleaf weeds, and it's based on iron. What is that?
Yeah, so there are some newer organic herbicides that are based on iron, and they I think still need to be proven a little bit in the lawn, but they've been out there for a couple of seasons. And so if you're looking to control, you know, non-grass species in your lawn, it is it's an organic alternative. It's a new organic alternative.
What's the theory about why it works?
You caught me there, Ray, but I believe it's, too much iron is affecting some dark reaction in the plant, some reaction where it's making, you know, starches and sugars.
Well, I'll let you know how she does. Our number here is 800-348-2551. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. Let's start out with a couple of quick emails, and then we'll hit the phones. This one came in before we started. This is from Suzanne. And Suzanne writes, when is the best time to wrap peach trees to protect them from squirrels and such? My trees have small, fuzzy peach buds. Is it too soon to do it now? And can you recommend a specific type of wrap? And that's from Suzanne.
Well, if they've pollinated and she has the fruit now, it's certainly not too soon. It's really about whatever she's using to put on the tree and how that catches the wind or not. There are some, some nettings out there online. There is that material called floating row cover or brand name called Rime. I think it's an old brand name now. That is white and lets a lot of lets air, water, and light through it.
Yeah.
And that can work pretty well.
All right.
Fred? Yeah, there's also another product called Tanglefoot that is sort of like a small mesh webbing. It's too small for a bird to go through or a squirrel, but it lets insects still go through and the moisture and all that. It doesn't affect the foliage or photosynthesis. And I would say if she's got, small peaches on there now, the squirrels and various other critters, don't always wait for them to ripen up perfectly. They often get the jump start on you. So I think, getting something like what Greg had mentioned or some Tanglefoot on there, something to try to protect them if it's a problem. If it's not a problem and it hasn't been in the past, then not to worry. But if she's asking that question, I tend to think that she's had some issues. And I don't think, being proactive and getting it on there sooner is going to hurt. It can only help.
All right. One more email here, and then we'll catch the phones. This one's from Eric in Ulster County. Eric writes, I have a great lilac bush, but don't want it to grow too high. I'm wondering how much I can safely cut back. When is the best time to cut it back? And if it'll mean no lilacs next year?
Yeah, his timing on that question is good because the timing for lilacs, ideal pruning, so you don't lose blooms for next year, is right after they bloom. So over here at the Arboretum, we have lilacs kind of pretty much in bloom, full bloom, and some even past bloom.
Yeah.
Some are coming into bloom. There are different species. But as soon as they're done blooming, the plant's going to basically want to go into seed production mode and using a lot of that energy that it would put the flowers at the seed. So, generally, just cleaning out the seed heads, you're going to get more blooms. But any kind of pruning that you want to do right after they bloom, that's fine. You're not taking away flower buds until after you wait a little while. So anytime on those kind of plants, and generally we say, one-third of the plant is kind of a maximum. And depending on what they're trying to do, if they wanted to shorten it, you could cut back to different intersecting nodes, or you could take out a few of the largest canes every year. And that's kind of what we often recommend is look at the biggest, thickest canes in there and try to remove a couple of those every year and replace those big canes with younger shoots. And therefore, your plant's always kind of flowering nicely, keeps to a certain size that you'd like to be able to maintain it, and it also produces maximum blooms.
Greg Ward.
Yeah. I mean, what Fred is saying is really exactly what would need to happen. It probably is going to take a few years to go through the entire pruning process, so that you're taking out some big, a little over 8 foot wood today, taking it either at the ground level or lower on some node that has some branches below it, so that what is left at the top is. Growing steadily and forms a bud. In other words, you don't want to shear the whole top off at 8 feet because then you will lose the flowers. You're removing an older one, allowing a younger one to take its place. And that process might not be every single year. It might be every fourth year or something like that.
All right, let's hit the phones and grab one before our first break. 800-348-2551 is the number. Andy in Glenville. Andy, you're up.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Question with strangers. I get big, beautiful green leaves. Sometimes I get a couple blooms. I'd like to see more flowers. How do I feed them? How do I take care of them?
Yeah, so it sounds like you have those pink or blue type of hydrangea.
Hello?
Hello, can you hear us?
You there?
Yeah, are you there? Hello? Oh, boy. We got a little issue here?
Green leaves. Sometimes I get...
Okay. Oh, he's listening to himself. Okay, Andy, if Andy in Glenville calls back, we'll put him back on the air. Tell you what, let's grab, not grab, but let's go to Mary in East Hampton, Massachusetts. Mary, you're on.
Oh, hello.
Oh, hello.
Hi. So I have a tree and lawn question, but thanks for taking the call. Anyway,
you bet.
I have a 40-foot-old red maple that's about 6 feet from the road and just a foot from my neighbor's driveway, and it's bordered on the other side by quote-unquote lawn. I should say I never use chemicals, and I actively encourage every kind of wildflower that comes, and I don't even mow until it's all gone. But where this tree that's in decline, around the roots and all around the quite for a long way, as well as where an old tree was, that the lawn and everything growing is dying back. I have thousands of anthills. Even the chickweed is shriveling up. Not even the ajuga, which is my basic ground cover everywhere in the lawn, is dying back. And so the question is there anything I can do? It's the tree, by the way, is going to be pruned by the city and fertilized in the fall, so I'm super happy about that.
Okay.
But is there anything I can do to help anything grow in the front lawn here, or just turn it into mulch and forget right. about it?
Interesting, huh? Fred, what do you think? I think feeding it now would be not a bad idea.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little late, probably because the leaf out right now, it's not going to gather as much, but it certainly would take in some material. So I do think fertilizing it certainly would help our situation. Is the tree in sort of a state of decline that you would notice from, like, sort of the top portion of the tree working its way down? Or would you say it looks kind of good, but you look it up at it and you see some dead branches mixed in the canopy? Which one of those scenarios would you?
It's the first one. It's definitely in decline. I've noticed it over the last 3 or 4 years.
Okay, so if you are noticing a top down sort of decline, then that definitely indicates that there's something going on with the tree, most likely in the root system itself. In rare cases, it could be like a verticillium type wilt, but I would say that would probably be most likely secondary. I would say it's probably associated to some kind of root system issue.
All right.
And it could also be some cambium decline. So if you look at the bark, trunk, and you may know the answer to this already, are you noticing like a section that's maybe not alive or bark flaking off?
That's fine. It's the tree warden felt that it was due to root compaction from the street, and so that had really affected the tree. But he's going to help that out as best possible fertilizing. But my question is about the lawn.
Okay.
Like, is there any hope for that at all?
Let's answer that one quickly. We're overdue for a break. So one of you.
I think that the mulching idea would probably be the best situation for the tree, and it would solve your lawn problem.
Okay.
It would help to create aeration in the roots, which is what that tree surgeon mentioned, which is one of the leading declines of urban trees. A lot of times they're either planted too deep or they're getting compacted roots.
Right.
And in your case, it sounds like that. So I would agree that probably mulch would be a win-win.
All right. Let's take a quick break here. It's The Gardening Show. Greg Ward, Fred Breglia are here. 800-348-2551 is the number. We'll be right back. Fox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. It's gardening today. Great weather for it, huh? Until the thunderstorms hit. 800-348-2551 is our number, and the email address is voxpopwamc.org. We have Greg Ward. We have Fred Breglia here, and they're champing at the bit to answer your questions. Now let's do a few emails and then back to the phones. This one's from Paul. Paul says, I'm creating a small Japanese-style garden in my yard. Any sources for non-invasive bamboo? Or if you don't know of sources, do you know the name of the plant that I should search for online?
In terms of probably the best genus name for non-invasive are the Fargesias. And they tend to be a little shorter in that 4 to 5 foot range, but they are called the clumping bamboos. They stay where you put them.
Okay.
I didn't hear the town he lived in.
Let me go back here. I'm doing this on my phone. Altamont. I'm sorry, Altamont.
Altamont. That's south, right?
Oh, no, that's just outside of
Albany. That's like Albany area.
Yeah.
Albany, yeah.
In the hills
so,
a little
yeah,
bit.
So the one that's prettier that he's probably would think of, Phyllostachys are the taller ones with nice stems, but they do tend to spread and run. And in, I don't know if you have any of that, Fred, in the garden, but it's fine. You can control it, but if you're, you know, if you're going to, you know, forget about it, it will kind of creep away and run down the road eventually after, you know, several years.
All right. This
One option that you can sometimes do is actually create in-ground root barriers. So if you buried like a the roots won't go more than like 15 inches under the soil surface. So if you actually planted it in the soil, but almost in a weird way, you create almost like a container with no bottom, just sort of sides. That's a good way to get away with sometimes planting the one you like and not having it run away on you. Sometimes that can work. Sometimes they jump that barrier too. So
yeah,
but it is a way.
It's something that would look great in the garden for years and years. It's just that, you know, 25 years from now, who's ever there at the house would maybe have to deal with that. It's not going to happen overnight. There's one more nice little one called Pleoblastis. It's very short, about a foot tall, and does spread, but in a controlled way, and would work well in a Japanese garden as well.
All right, one more email, and then back to the phones. This is from Mike in Rexford. Subject heading: buckhorn trees. We live on a wooded lot with lots of hardwood trees, mostly maples, hickory oaks, black cherries. We also have a lot of buckhorn trees. I have recently learned that these buckhorns are actually an invasive species that they discourage surrounding growth. I have seen YouTube videos from the upper Midwest where they advocate destroying these trees. So I'm wondering, what should I do? Should I cut these trees down? Should I pull up the saplings?
Yeah, that's a big one, and they're actually buckthorns, not buckhorns. They have a distinct thorn on those plants, and they can be quite nasty. In fact, I got punctured with one not too long ago because we were cutting some down. It's one of the invasive species that we do deal with here at the Landis Arboretum, the common buckthorn. And you know, one thing that I would recommend in terms of getting answering his question, yes, I do think that if he wants to preserve the integrity of the woodlot and the species there, buckthorn is only going to get more prolific and spread even more so. So removing them is definitely advocated, but the key is to the timing on that. So he's a little bit late, but you know, hey, it's never too late to cut a buckthorn. So you know, he could still cut them. But the best timing to get rid of these buckthorns is right in the spring when they use up that foliage. I should say use up all their energy to put on that first set of foliage or leaves.
Yeah.
They really don't have a lot of energy left in the roots, and if you cut them right after that, you have pretty good success rates at not having them grow back on you. Now, cutting them now is still better than leaving them, but I would expect the regrowth to occur. So when he cuts them down, look for the regrowth and then cut that regrowth again. And a couple of cuttings like that, and you definitely will wear that tree out of energy, and it'll go. It'll definitely die, and that's something that, you know, you're not going to accomplish all at once, but it's something that, you know, you kind of chip away at.
Okay.
And next spring you do another round, and, you know, you kind of go after it, and you can win the battle. If we can do it here at Landis, you can do it out there as well.
All right. Let's go jump quickly back to the phones here, and Margie has been waiting an awfully long time. Margie in Olive Bridge, you're on.
Hey, that's me. Hi, guys.
Hi.
It's so nice of you to take my call.
You bet.
So I have actually three things. I've got a weird honeysuckle problem, a lilac that puts out two blossoms, and a little cluster of irises, not really crowded rather, but only has like one stalk with one beautiful flower on it. And I don't know, I just put it out there. With the honeysuckle problem is that last summer, this big thriving volunteer honeysuckle, all of a sudden, boughs started dying off, like one by one, and the trunk put out this liquid that smelled kind of like beer.
Mm.
And
cool.
You had my
attention. And then it looked. I know. I figured, come over for some honeysuckle juice.
Oh yeah.
And, so the thing looked pretty dead. And this year, all that dead stuff was still dead, but it did start growing lower on the trunk. So we pruned it back to only stuff that was growing. But what happened? Have you ever heard of that? It's so weird.
you know, that is also an invasive species, Japanese honeysuckle, I'm assuming, because that's the one that gets big that and would volunteer all of a sudden in your yard. And my first guess is that it was there for a while, that it's a fairly old plant. The stems are 2 inches or more thick at the base.
Yeah.
And so that just means that it's
curving.
Yeah. That, and I have seen when I've actually gone in to remove some, I've seen where the original sort of mother plant is dead, but all around it are these younger plants. So I would just say that it lived its life for the most part, and whatever you were smelling was just decay in some way. There's no specific issues there. It is, you know, they're fun, they're pretty, but it is something that you may want to consider not having in your garden.
We have this, you know, we're sort of like right on the road, so we have this big hedge to sort of give us
it's
privacy.
Helpful.
It's mostly
I'm not advocating you have to take it out. If it's helpful, it's doing a job, and that's okay too.
Yep, you know, you can rejuvenate them as well. You're a little bit late on the timing, but in the future, let's say this year, it just looks really. Sometimes they choke themselves out, like Greg had said, and that original parent stem will actually die and then decay, and there's like that honeysuckle juice or whatever. But they are often prone to choking themselves kind of out. That's not uncommon when they get old. But if you want it to rejuvenate it actually rejuvenates very much like lilac. So in the springtime next year, just before anything really starts to open, but you see some of the buds beginning to swell, you could take that down like literally to 6 inches of the ground, and you'll have a brand new shrub.
Okay.
That will come back up. You won't have flowers that first year, or at least you may not. But either way, you'll have a new shrub, and then after that, it would look good again, and then it would probably be easier to manage. You kind of like working with a new shrub again, as opposed to like an old one trying to bring it back. So that's, I think, the way I would proceed if you wanted to keep it. Otherwise, you could certainly remove it and possibly plant in something that's even, you know, much nicer. And also, it would get kind of big kind of quickly, too. Mm. So, and there's a lot of options for a lot of options.
Margie, thanks a lot for the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Fred Breglia is here from Landis Arboretum, and Greg Ward from Ward's Nursery in Great Barrington. And the number, once again, is 800-348-2551. Joe in New Baltimore. Hello, Joe. What do you know?
Well, very little at this point, but nice to talk to you, Ray.
Hello.
And Fred and Greg, happy to talk to you, too. I have another lilac question. Must be lilac day. My neighbor has a lilac that has just been wilting like mad. All the blossoms wilted off, many of the leaves. All the other lilacs on the property are doing fine, and all the other plants are. There's just this one particular bush, so I don't know whether it's a wilt, a fungus, or what. Can you diagnose it and tell me how to treat it?
Okay.
I would actually say first, Fred, that there's a lot of bacterial wilt happening with lilacs right now. We saw a lot of it. And that is, that's a bacterial spore that's floating around in the air when the weather conditions are right, when there's some, available entry wounds on the plant. And also, this is maybe anecdotal, but when we have these sort of fluctuations in temperature where the lilac has grown out and begun to bud, and then it gets cold and damp, the bacterial blight is able to move in. And it can happen just on one lilac here and not the rest. And it has to do with specific location or the age of that plant or the amount of foliage it's put out that year. And I've seen quite a bit of that in the last 10 days or so.
Okay, so most likely that if it is a borer, that would be the other option that it could be. Isolated plant like that would be the one that you would often associate with borers a lot of times. And if it is that, you would see a definite top decline because the borer is down at the lower part of the plant. So this is a way to kind of rule it out. If it's the wilt, you're going to see it kind of on the edges and ends and also the kind of throughout the plant. If it's a borer, you're going to see a noticeable top down of like decline. So it'll be a line going from the top right on down the plant. And if it is a borer, you often may see evidence of that in the stem. So, it sounds more like a wilt, but certainly if it is more of a top decline and you don't see any like real wilting foliage, then you might be looking for a borer.
All right, Joe.
And treatment is pretty minimal. Some pruning could occur. You could pinch out everything. They do recommend you do the sterilization of your pruners in between cuts. That's probably very helpful, and you might want to do that. So you're going to go around and remove each little bits of black wilting stem with your pruners, but each time you would dip your pruners into a little bleach and water or alcohol and water. Just, we all have a lot of that right now.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then the lilac should leaf out enough to be fine, and hopefully next year it won't happen.
Well, Joe, thank you.
And then get rid of the foliage when you prune it off. Don't compost that foliage. It could be spores or I should say bacteria. So, generally if it's diseased, I usually like to compost everything. But if it's diseased, I'd say bag it and throw it out with the garbage.
All right. We done with that one?
Okay. I think so.
All right, let's move on. Thanks, Joe. Appreciate the call. Robert in Ravenna. Robert, you're on.
Hi. I'm speaking for Robbie. He had an appointment.
Hibiscus.
The foliage has no blossoms. There's white flies, even though it's been sprayed profusely. And he had one blossom in 5 years. It's a big pot, so it has plenty of room. He spends the whole winter inside. It's still in the house, too. So he's got two beautiful hibiscus. One has blooms, yellow, big, beautiful, and the other one does not have any foliage,
Yeah.
He had some worms. They were huge worms, and he got them all out and sprayed the whole tree. But
yeah.
Now there's little white flies in there.
So this is a tropical hibiscus, Hibiscus chinensis. It's often used as an ornamental flowering plant outside in your yard, usually in a container, and then you bring them in the winter and try to winter them and then do it again the next year. And a lot of people do that pretty successfully, but bugs can be a problem. So the first thing is get them all outside now. This warm weather is perfect.
Okay.
It's time to get everybody out.
Okay.
Watch the watering. You don't want it to be constantly wet while it hasn't no leaves on it, so a nice dry wet cycle with the soil, which might take you might not water this thing for a week or more possibly. And you start to see some new leaves, prune out anything that's dry, any little woody stems. A little fertilizer in the pot, any container fertilizer would be very helpful. And I bet you by July it's going to look pretty good.
Ooh.
Okay, thank you so very much.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Our number here is 800-348-2551. And we'll grab one more before the next break. Cynthia in West Taconic. Hi, Cynthia, you're on.
Thank you. So about 5 years ago, we put in a Serbian spruce, which was, it was already a large tree for a nursery. It wasn't a teeny one. And it's been beautiful and healthy all that time. And it was wonderful and healthy at the beginning of this year, and then about 2 weeks ago, on a dime, it turned, and it's getting all yellow and dying off from the bottom up, and it's moving very quickly. In fact, I fear that it's probably too late for any. I don't know what it is. I haven't been able to locate anything particular in a book that would be helpful.
Is it a dwarf specimen? Is it a dwarf specimen?
Not.
It's a regular standard Serbian spruce. Yep.
Yeah.
It sounds the fungal. It certainly sounds, if you're losing it from the bottom up, maybe with the cold temperatures that we've had, I'd be surprised if it was, doing that so quickly like that with no sign of that in the past. Now, it may have showed a little bit of symptoms, but maybe where they were undetected. If it is fungal, my gut feeling would be that, maybe it started even last year. And then this year it's getting bad enough to where you really notice it. But if it's a bottom-up decline, that tells me that, the plant's installed correctly. That it eliminates a lot of other factors. Top-down declines indicate another kind of set of issues. And you got a bottom-up decline, which is usually more fungal-related, especially with evergreens, needle casts, all those types of issues are almost always bottom-ups. Do you have anything to add to that, Greg?
Well, yeah, I have seen perfectly healthy Serbian spruce then fail after many years in the ground. I assumed it was some fungal issue with needles, but I think it could be You know, as you mentioned, actually, Fred, it could be prior stress from last year or over the winter. It could, you know, possibly be some kind of root issue especially if it was moisture related, either too dry or too wet all of a sudden. But I've never found a solution to why they would decline. And I think, you know, a little post-mortem, once it's done, and just to check the root system out for sure, the soil would maybe lead somewhere.
Yeah, it might, because in the ones that I have, I've seen this before on other conifers, including Serbian, and the times that I've seen that, it's been more site-related that creates a stress and then makes it more prone to potentially getting a fungal issue. And, you know, like I said, a lot of times these things are kind of underlying, and they sort of don't rear their ugly heads until they really do. And by that point, a lot of times it's not great. So, you know, you could certainly try a fungicide, but most of the time those are more preventatives than they are cure-alls. And, you know, my gut feeling is this does not sound good.
Oh. Yeah, if you don't see new growth, you know, if the buds are not swelling on the majority of the tips of the plant, obviously the leader, and expanding and growing out, then it's probably not going to make it. And you'll certainly know, if you don't know that now, you'll know it in the next 3 weeks here.
Okay, we have
And if it does stabilize, in other words, you see a line between the life and death, you could take out remove the dead parts. Unfortunately, it will leave you with a more unique looking tree. But I've also turned specimens like that stabilized into some pretty neat specimens as well. So, you know, I'd say, you know, wait a little while, and otherwise I think we're looking at probably removal and replacement. And I wouldn't use the same exact tree in that spot either.
All right, let's take a quick break. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. 800-348-2551. Gardening today. Greg Ward, Fred Breglia. We'll be back. Welcome back to Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. It's 800-348-2551. Although I got to tell you, the phone lines are so loaded, we probably won't get to everybody. Hang in there. We'll do our best. This is what I like to call the lightning round with Fred Breglia and Greg Ward. And we'll hit three or four emails here, and then we will go quickly. This one is from Matthew. We have a small pink dogwood, seems nice and healthy, but for some reason it didn't blossom this year, only leafed out. Any idea why? And that's from Matt in Connecticut.
No big deal. They can do that. You get a good year or a heavy blue blossom year and a light blossom year, and I bet next year it's going to look even better.
Neato. This is from Barb in Clifton Park. Subject heading bleach? I have some sort of invasive bush growing all over my fences. It seems that they may be berries. They have very prickly stems and are very invasive, growing under the ground and popping up everywhere. Can I kill these by pouring bleach on the roots?
Oh, my gosh, that sounds terrible. Yeah. Sounds
no,
like
I would
barberry.
I would not recommend that at all. I would say if it's something that's invasive, cut it and then cut the regrowth. Putting bleach down is going to create a whole bunch of other problems.
Right.
So highly not recommended. I mean, I would use a herbicide if you had to go that road before you would. That's labeled for killing. Okay. As opposed to bleach.
Right. And the new kitchen item that's for an herbicide that's organic is vinegar.
Oh, there you go. So napalm is
although
out, right?
A bunch of that in the root system of a plant is not recommended. It works really well for and when you say vinegar, it often does not kill because it doesn't have a high concentration of vinegar in household vinegar. So agricultural grade vinegars work well for patios, driveways, but too much vinegar in a root system of a tree is not, pouring it on there is not recommended.
All right, this one's from Susan. Trim fig. I have a very small fig tree, 3 feet high. It's very leggy because we bring it into the main house during winter and never goes dormant for long. It has one set of stems, several other stems. It also has now developed what appears to be leaf rust. I just sprayed fungicide. Can I trim it now at this time of year? And that's from Susan.
This is a great time to trim it. I assume she's bringing it outside, like we talked about with the hibiscus for the summer, to really get it going. And to trim it back right now allows for it to have a great summer ahead.
All right. Hey, what's a good native species of tree, shrub, or even a plant that can help with stream erosion? And that's from Greg.
I personally like red maples. I think they're great. You know, there are a lot of other natives that other people might, if it's stream erosion plants and you have a wild area, plants, even box elder, things like that, that a lot of people, you know, cringe when I say that, but it's a native and it has a great little role in stream bank erosion. Willow of any form, all kinds of shrubs, trees, any kind of willow. If you have a lot of room, you can plant a big willow. If you don't have a lot of room, there's a million shrub willows. All of those will all stabilize stream banks really, really well. So there is a trick, too, where you can actually take some willows and actually cut them into sticks when they're dormant. This would be, you know, too late for that now, but next year you take cuttings and dormant sticks about the size of maybe a dime or less, and you wrap them in bundles, and you can actually plant those in the ground and you plant them sideways, bury them like a little stack of sticks,
yeah,
willow sticks, and they'll root like crazy out of that as well.
Okay.
I've used that to control, to stabilize banks myself personally.
Oh, terrific.
It works well.
This one is the last email, and then we'll try to get to as many calls as we can. This is from Mike in Hinsdale. Mike writes, with the pandemic and all, I've gotten very behind starting our garden. What's a good time? What is good to plant for veggies and fruits this late in the spring that we can still guarantee will come up? And, Ray, you got robbed with the New York State Associated Press Awards. Well, that's very nice, Mike. I wasn't up for any awards because, frankly, how can you give an award for just some strange, weird garden show? It's not even a topic. So, anyway, my wife has the same question. Are there any plants or veggies we can put in this late?
Oh, it is.
Everything.
Just
virtually.
Beginning. Just beginning.
Yeah,
the things you probably don't want to plant are, it's a little late for onions and certainly late for garlic, but pretty much everything else, cabbage, kale, broccoli, tomatoes, peppers, lettuce, spinach, carrots, beans.
Wow.
All of that.
Really? All of that stuff?
Yeah, in fact, my dad and I, we would never really install, with the exception of some cold weather crops like peas and you know, chards and collards, we wouldn't even put the garden in because of danger of potential frost till Memorial Day weekend. And my wife and I just did the same thing this past weekend too, Memorial Day weekend every year. That's usually when I do most of the planting except for our gardens, except for the cold crops, like I said, peas and you know, collards and stuff.
But from seeds or from plants?
You do both. We put seeds in there. I mean, a lot of plants do better from seeds. So beans, you know, beans and cucumbers and things like that, you don't even need to have starts on. Squash.
Wow.
Although squash plants would also do well. And if you had established cucumbers, that's good. But you could definitely be planting seeds right now. Absolutely.
All right. Back to the phones we go. Donna in Glenville. Donna, you're on.
Oh, thanks for taking my call. I wanted to know how to buy good topsoil. I went to a big box store this weekend because I had some bare spots in the lawn, some low spots I was in. So I opened the first 40-pound bag. It looks like black sand, and it smelled like industrial sludge. And I just thought, oh, well, I opened it, you know, so I filled in the spots on the lawn. I mixed some grass seed in it. I don't know what it's going to do, but do you have any recommendations? I mean, how can they call that topsoil? Instead of, you know, I do work with the nursery for mulch and stuff, but how do you get a better product?
Usually you're paying for a better product. Number one, that would be, you know, always the number one. If it's extra, extra cheap, it probably isn't ideal. But, you know, you can take what you have in the yard and simply amend it, you know, and move it somewhere else. So you can take your soil from, you know, the back 40 and fill in the spots that you need to fill in. But the other thing you do is go to your garden center or box store, wherever you like to go, and ask them to look at it. Ask them to allow you to have a sample visually of what's in the bag. And that goes a long way to understanding what you're getting.
Yeah, and topsoils are not created equal by any means. It's just what Greg said. You know, you can go from one garden center to another, to a box store, to a mom and pop operation, and you know, you can get all kinds of different grades of topsoil, and I've seen all kinds of different problems associated with topsoil, including, you know, pH issues and stuff. So it is good to find that good source, and you know, not all topsoils, you know, it's because it's labeled that way, you know, it may not even be true topsoil. So once you find that, then you develop that relationship and you know where to go. Like, you know, locally around here, I've got some good places, you know, and I'm in the you know, Albany, New York area. So there's quite a few places, but in your area, you know, I'm not 100% sure. But once you find it, you know, and ask around other gardeners. You know, people are getting it from somewhere, and you know, it's definitely not created equal.
All right, Donna, thanks a lot. Over to Chatham, New York, and June. June, you're on.
Yes, I planted some iris last year. I live in a trailer park, and my cousin in Massachusetts gave me these iris, and they're beautiful, and they grew about 3 feet tall. Mm. But last year and this year, I have trouble. The buds, they deform, and they get a strange shape, and they drop off, or they just sit there and look ugly.
Oh, boy.
Is it a bug?
It may be a thrip. There's a little insect that will live in the buds. If you took that stem to your garden center, they could probably identify it for you. But, yeah, if the buds are about to open and then are deforming, it's possible it's a thrip, which is a little tiny insect that's sort of feeding in there. It's also possible it was frost from some cold weather we had a couple weeks ago. So those are the kinds of things to look at.
Right.
What can I do for the thrip? Can you spray it or?
Yeah. So I think you need to identify that it is the thrip first. And if it is, there are some things you could consider treating the plant with prior to the buds forming.
And what would those things be?
So there would be an insecticide. You could use some of the spinosad products, which are organic, that would control the life cycle of that.
And would it be easy for June to figure it out, though, if in fact it is the thrip?
So that's why I thought I'm not sure where you live, June, but if
Chatham.
You brought that Chatham. Oh, well,
Chatham,
it's close
in eastern Columbia County near Massachusetts.
You know, it's
very near where Greg is. Yeah,
put 30 minutes to Great Barrington. If you want to take a drive, we'll take a look at it.
Oh, that's very nice. Over at Ward's Nursery. Well, June, thanks a lot. Good luck. And over now to William in Newburgh. William. Hello.
Hey, Ray, Greg, Fred, how you guys doing
today?
Hey,
good.
Good.
Quick question. I have bought a few birds of paradise from a box store. They're about 2 feet tall. I put them in some cactus soil that are supposed to be quick draining, but the soil is staying moist. What am I doing wrong?
So I don't think you're doing anything wrong. The plants are inside, right?
No, they're outside. I put them on the porch.
Okay.
They get about six hours of sun.
Okay, so they're it's a larger new pot. You took them and put them in from the original pot, and you put them into a larger pot.
Yes, about an 8-inch pot and a 10-inch pot.
Yeah,
I used a starter pot from another plant. You know, I cleaned it out with peroxide and everything, but I'm starting to see mold at the bottom of the drain holes.
Yeah, I mean it's possible that the cactus soil is a little heavy, is not, you know, it's not draining properly. It has not been raining for the last, you know, week or so here. So the soil should be drying out. That said, you know, they don't take a lot of moisture. They're not heavy water users. So whatever water was in there was probably more than accurate or adequate. You didn't watered it once, I assume, when you potted them up, but have you watered them a second time? And I would just hold off on that.
All right. So the mold on the bottom of the plant in the dirt, should I be concerned about that, or should I let it go for a while?
So there's surface mold on the top of the root ball. You could disturb that. It's probably related to the material in the soil. It's feeding on the organic matter in the soil. It's not most likely not affecting the plant in any way, but removing that is always helpful to understand whether it's more pervasive or not.
Yeah, and you are going to want to let that plant dry out, so keep an eye on it. Don't water it, and then, you know, feel the soil, and when it does start to get lighter, you know, after it's not completely dry, but it's close, that's when you would want to rewater it. When you first pull a plant that's in a small container into a larger container, it could hold moisture for some amount of time before the roots start to really grow into that new media. So that very early part is where you know it's important not to overwater. So it sounds like you're okay, but just keep an eye on it. Let it dry out, and if it's going to rain and you're still wet, I tend to think I would maybe bring those in and not let them, you know, get blasted again, because then root rots could occur.
Okay.
And especially when you go from a small container to a larger container until that root mass grows in. Once you get it in, then you should start to see the water usage, you know, go up dramatically. And I don't think that would be an issue. You'd be past that point of worry at that point.
All right, William, thanks a lot. Lisa in Saratoga. Lisa, you're on.
Hi, yeah. Can you hear me?
Sure.
Go ahead.
Well, I'm here. Hello.
Hi. Hello.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Hi. Can you hear us?
Can you hear me? Yep. Yeah.
Right.
Yes, I can hear you.
Swell.
I'm in the garden.
Oh, great.
So I live in a home that has a historic home. It's got a beautiful magnolia tree that is blooming. No, it's got buds, you know, almost like a pussy willow bud, but it doesn't bloom. My neighbors tell me this was a show place that people came from miles around to see it and had their pictures taken. You can Google it and find it. But it stopped blooming.
Oh.
And I did have, I think I sent an email to one of the arborists, but I can do it again. I had two people tell me it hasn't died, but then and they suggested fertilizer. What's your suggestion? But I don't even know what fertilizer or where to start.
Well, we have about a minute, just a little over a minute, guys. So go ahead.
Yeah. So you've had this plant and it looked great. This is the first year. It does not look good. Is that correct?
This is the second year. I mean, this is an ancient tree. It's very, very big and very, very old.
Yeah, and does it have leaves?
Yeah, for 2 years.
Does it have leaves? Does it have leaves coming out of it now?
No,
it has green foliage?
No leaves. No.
All right, so the first thing I would do is scratch the bark on the twigs.
Uh-huh.
And if you see green underneath that bark, then you know those twigs are still alive. Magnolias can be a little later to leaf out. They also can be prone to some other issues, including frost damage, but I don't think that's what's going on with yours. It could also have a really bad case of scale, and that could have declined it over a period of years. So scale is really, really bad. But I would scratch the bark on the twigs, and if you see green, I would say be patient and leave it. And if it doesn't leaf out, then it's a goner. But if you're scratching those twigs and you're seeing brown, then that doesn't sound too good if all the buds are all unopened and you don't see any leaves. Doesn't sound like that's a good situation.
Yeah. It still has plenty of time to leaf out, so that's what you need it to do. And once you see the leaves forming, you can fertilize it at that point, or it will be helpful.
Okay.
And so, but if it's not going to leaf out, then it's done.
All right.
Yeah, then it's not a fertilizer issue at that point. So keep an eye on it. Have patience. They can be a little late, and whatever part does leaf out, you might be able to prune back other parts that are dead and keep the live parts and get them to fill in the crown as well. So if you do want to keep me abreast of this, if you want at some point, fred@landisarboretum.org. You could send me photos and I could maybe diagnose it further for you.
Well, Lisa, thanks a lot. And that'll be the last call. Guys, thank you for being here. Support comes from Watercolors by Edith, Shutesbury, Massachusetts. Edith Hunsberger, a painter in acrylic on watercolors, paintings of people and pets from emailed photographs. No contact required. Completed work within 3 weeks or less. edith-hunsberger.artistwebsites.com. Ali, the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute at Berkshire Community College, offering live interactive online classes in current events, history, science, literature, music, and more, beginning June 1st, berkshireali.org. And Whitney's Farm Market and Country Gardens, Cheshire. Greenhouse now open with COVID-19 precautions, offering hanging baskets, annual perennials, vegetable starts, seeds, and garden supplies. Whitney'sFarmMarket.com. Thanks again to Fred Breglia and Greg Ward for being here today. Thank you for listening. Sorry if we did not get to your calls or emails today. They'll be back. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Jordan Yoxall took the calls. Our producer is Jackie Orchard. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, we'll talk farm to table with the folks from Schenectady Green Market and Squashville Farm. Stand by now for the Capital Connection.